404-7850.
Hey, welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Okay, big news on the animal front. GoDaddy CEO Bob Parsons, Vietnam vet and entrepreneur, is in hot water with a lot of people who care about animals and most people who have any sense of decency. You probably know this. It's been all over the internet. He recently posted a victorious video of himself shooting and killing an elephant in Zimbabwe, which also includes footage of a mass of villagers gathering around the carcass and butchering it where there for its meat. The video shows Parsons standing in a trampled field of sorghum and promoting that killing the animal was the best way to preserve the crop. Also on the video is a close-up of the GoDaddy logo. The video states, quote, "Properly dealing with problem elephants saves crops, feeds villages, and helps maintain elephant herds." And a graphic on the video says, quote, "Damage is extensive. Unless elephants are stopped, entire crops may be lost. When crops are lost, subsistence farmers risk starvation." The reaction to this almost unbelievable act has been swift, with animal advocates harshly denouncing the killing and many GoDaddy customers taking their accounts elsewhere. Now, did this elephant have to be killed to help the villagers? Of course not. Parsons is a really wealthy guy, okay, who easily could have covered the cost of any damage caused by the elephant. And furthermore, he can easily arrange to have barriers or fences be put up to prevent future damage to crops. He could do scores of other charitable acts to help the lives of these villagers for the long term. But no, this macho guy had to shoot a hungry, beautiful elephant and make a huge spectacle of it. What a shame. And Parsons is not at all worried or doubtful. He thinks he's doing something helpful, and his website claims he makes yearly elephant hunting trips to, quote, find these problem elephants and get them handled. In my opinion, okay, this guy is heartless and sick. I want to encourage you, if you are a GoDaddy customer, to take the steps to get away from that company. We are doing that with our web hosting and web-based email. I know it takes some effort and time, but compassionate animal lovers need to send a message to this guy and this company, don't you think? There are many choices out there. You can go to Network Solutions or to CheapDomainRegistration.com, where there are a couple companies like Namecheap, which I really like since they offer special pricing for people who switch from GoDaddy, and with a percentage of that going to organizations that really does great work trying to help the elephants, like the group Save the Elephants. Now, I invited Mr. Parsons to appear on Animals Today to debate this issue with me, but this big guy with a gun who enjoys and brags about killing majestic living creatures denied my offer. Okay, so dump GoDaddy, okay? And drop me an email when you do at drlori@animalstodayradio.com. That's D-R-L-O-R-I @animalstodayradio.com. And join us on Facebook, where we discuss these issues and so many other animal-related issues. Okay, listen, we have a great hour for you today. Now, you know, in the United States, pets are considered to be property. So, say someone maliciously or negligently kills your pet, your child, your baby, a member of your family. You being the, quote, owner, is only entitled to the cash value of a pet at the time of the death. Maybe $20, $30, $40, maybe what you paid to adopt him out of the shelter. Incredible, isn't it? Well, later in the show, we'll be speaking to veterinarian Dr. Kenneth Newman, who's looking to enact a law which allows the owner of a pet that is killed through a deliberate act of malice or through an act of negligence to compensation for loss of companionship and pain and suffering. Also, a bit later in the hour, we will be speaking to Dr. David Dosa, who is going to tell us about one cat's unusual talent. You see, for the past few years, this cat named Oscar has been living among patients with advanced dementia at a facility in Rhode Island. And Oscar has this uncanny ability to predict when patients are going to die. Really? Okay, but first, today's Easter, and happy Easter, by the way. And the animals that many people associate with Easter are chicks and baby rabbits. And I know some people who think it's a good idea to buy these animals as a gift for the Easter holiday. Well, my next guest is going to tell us what happens to so many of these chicks and baby rabbits and even ducklings during this time of year. I want to welcome Leanne Cronquist, who is the California Shelter Director for Farm Sanctuary. Welcome to the program, Leanne.
Thanks for having me.
Leanne, describe the issues of overcrowding shelters face following the Easter holiday.
I mean, it happens nationwide where farm animal sanctuaries like us, smaller humane societies, get calls from people who have adopted these animals or taken these animals, give them as gifts to other people, and then the weeks following Easter, they realize that this is a lifelong commitment to these animals, and they don't want to make it.
So families and parents really should consider a lot before acquiring a rabbit or a chick to keep as a pet. And what are the mistakes you commonly see?
It's just they just need constant attention. If you're getting a baby animal of any species, they need specific type of housing and feed, light, heat. They have specific health issues that you need to watch for. And eventually, these cute little cuddly animals are going to grow up. You know, one of the big problems is that people get chicks and they turn out to be roosters, and people don't like the crowing. And that's when a lot of sanctuaries and humane societies get calls that these people cannot keep these animals anymore. Same thing with rabbits. They're really nice and cute and cuddly when they're babies, but as they grow up, they don't like to be held and handled. And maybe they will scratch a child or someone who's trying to do that with them, which is just not natural, not a natural situation for them to be in.
So these animals are often dumped or given a surrender to a shelter, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, there's a new animated movie out called Hop, A Story About the Adventures of the teenage son of the Easter Bunny. Is this movie likely to make your job harder?
Probably. You know, any type of media or these type of cute stories about animals and putting it out there that they have these, I mean, they do have personalities, but they make these great little, you know, pets and companions. Again, it's just that they grow up. They have needs that people need to meet. It's the same thing with adopting a cat or a dog. You have to think about the lifelong treatment and lifelong care for these animals, not just this cute holiday time period.
So it's really not your shelters. It's shelters around the country. It's our country's state-wide problem where we just get a surge of these animals during this holiday.
Exactly. I mean, you know, unfortunately, there aren't that many farm animal sanctuaries, and, you know, humane societies who mostly deal with cats and dogs get these calls, too, and a lot of places just aren't set up. They don't have the ability to take these animals in and then adopt them out to forever homes, and, again, there just aren't enough homes for them.
Leanne, you have a program in which people can sponsor an animal for Easter. Please describe that.
Yep, we have our Adopt a Farm Animal program, and we have some special animals for Easter time. So instead of actually going out and purchasing an animal and giving that to someone as a gift, you can make a donation to Farm Sanctuary and sponsor an animal. So this way they can still help take care of an animal, learn about their personalities, learn about who they are, but they know that that animal is in a safe place for the rest of their lives and getting all their needs taken care of. And, you know, you get a picture of them, you learn about them, and it's just a nice way to, alternative to put in an Easter basket than an actual animal.
Yeah, how can my listeners learn more about this program and your website?
They can go to www.farmsanctuary.org, and there are links to our sponsorship program and our activities during the Easter season, and they can learn about the different animals that we have highlighted for this year.
And last point or message you want to give to my listeners, please.
I think the main thing is animals need a lot of attention and care, and it's not a good idea to give as gifts. It's a lifelong commitment, and the person who wants the animal should be choosing that for themselves, because a lot of times they're just not going to want them, and then the animals are the ones who end up getting hurt.
Leanne Cronquist, Farm Sanctuaries California Shelter Director. Thank you so much for appearing on Animals Today.
Thank you.
Now, don't go away. You're going to learn about Oscar, the cat, who can predict when elderly dementia patients at a facility in Rhode Island are going to die. Wow. And just ahead, what would you say your pet is worth? If someone deliberately or negligently kills your beloved pet, can you put a price tag on your pet as to how much you feel you should be compensated? For loss of companionship, for the pain and suffering, for the loss of who you might consider to be your best friend in the world, your child. The laws in states consider pets as property, so you're not going to get much. However, my next guest is going to try to change this. Stay with us. You're listening to Animals Today.
Running to and fro, hard working at the mill, never fail in the mill, yet come around.
Welcome back to the show. I want to welcome veterinarian Dr. Kenneth Newman. He has a small animal practice in Florida and is looking to enact a law he calls Gracie's Law, which concerns compensation for the negligent or malicious death of pets. Welcome to the show, Dr. Newman.
Hello, Dr. Lori.
Kenneth, please describe the current laws in the United States dealing with compensation for pets injured or killed by others through negligence or malice.
With the exception of Tennessee that allows for $5,000 in non-economic damages, all other states in the United States consider pets as property. As property, if somebody kills your pet maliciously or negligently, the owner or the pet parent, I should not say owner, the pet parent is entitled to either replacement value of the pet only, or in some states, depreciated value of the pet. So if a pet were to be, if you spend $800 on a pet and the pet were to be 6 years old, they may say the pet's worth $300 or $400, which does not compensate the owner for loss of companionship or pain and suffering, emotional damage or non-economic damage at the loss of a pet.
I like the term pet parent or guardian versus owner as well. Kenneth, why, in your view, are the current laws inadequate? If I go out and adopt any dog or cat for a small fee, isn't that what the market value of a pet ought to be?
Well, I like to make the case that 90% of pet parents today right now consider their pets to be family members. So to compensate somebody for replacement value, it came as a surprise to me when my dog was killed in an accident that a Geico attorney looked me in the eye and told me my dog was a piece of property and I was entitled to replacement value. Many people today are very strongly emotionally attached to their pets, and the laws that exist today do not recognize the way pet parents, number one, feel about their pets, or number two, recognize the emotional loss that occurs with the loss of a pet, which oftentimes there's research that shows that the loss of a pet can be greater to a pet parent than the loss of a friend or a relative.
Yeah, I believe it. Kenneth, what are you trying to do in Gracie's Law?
In Gracie's Law, Gracie's Law essentially states to recognize the emotional attachment that exists between pets and people, the human-animal bond. The parent of a pet that is killed through negligence or malice is entitled to $25,000 compensation for loss of companionship and pain and suffering. I do not think that that probably even comes close to recognizing what the real loss would be, but it is my effort to try to move pets above property status, to start moving them that way by recognizing there's a value of a pet over and above the replacement value.
Yes, so you're not trying to argue that pets are not property, but they have enhanced value on the basis of their relationships to their guardians.
As a veterinarian, I would say I've practiced veterinary medicine for 32 years. I am very upset that the veterinary profession is opposed to moving pets out of the property status. I have not had a single veterinarian contact me in the 6 months that I've been trying to promote this and say that this is a good idea. I've had a president of the Pinellas County Veterinary Medical Association tell me that this was bad for the profession. At a political caucus where the veterinarians met with potential candidates last fall, I had the chief lobbyist of the Florida Veterinary Medical Association come up and tell me it was bad for the profession. And when you ask why is it bad for the profession, nobody can give me a good answer. They do feel that there is an advantage to pets remaining property, and yet that could be good in some cases for negligent owners who choose not to vaccinate their pets, who choose not to have them on heartworm prevention, who choose not to treat them when they're ill. But what I ask any veterinarian I want somebody to tell me from the point of view of the pet, what is the advantage of the pet to remaining as property? And I don't think that there is much of an advantage to the pet. There may be an advantage to a negligent owner, but that does not meet the needs of the pets. And a lot of the problems that I see on a daily basis and veterinarians see on a daily basis, I call legalized neglect and abuse because they are property.
Is the bill all written up? What is the status?
Right now, I am not an attorney. When Gracie was killed in the accident in which a lady negligently backed up, admittedly, 25 yards without looking, pinning Gracie and I between the rear of our car and her car, I decided that I wanted to do something. And what I did is I wrote a memoir saying that pets had always been more important to me. They'd always been a member of our family. And the second point, that then I wrote Gracie's Law. It's been reviewed by the Judiciary Committee of the state of Florida. My own senator would not support this bill, but I do have two senators that will talk to me about sponsorship in the fall. And there's nothing that will be done this legislative session, but next year there is a possibility, if we can find a sponsor, that Gracie's Law could come to be law in the state of Florida. I'm optimistic that given a little bit of publicity and when pet owners understand or parents understand what this is about, pet parents will say, yes, there is an injustice that exists in the current laws today. There's nothing that allows for non-economic damages at the loss of a pet, and that we can begin to move our pet children beyond family or beyond property to family status.
Yes, yeah, so you're working on it to get this done in Florida. Have similar attempts, as far as you know, have been made in other states or other countries?
Well, what I learned is when I started looking into things, this is really a legislative issue. The public does not like proactive courts that legislate. And the Vermont Supreme Court had two notable cases, the Goodby case in which two cats were killed when a compounding pharmacist misformulated blood pressure medicine, and the second case, the Chalet case, where people vacationing in Vermont stopped at a church to allow their pets or their pet Shadow to relieve itself on a church property. It wandered onto a neighbor's lawn who shot Shadow, killing Shadow. Shadow ran back to his mother and died by bleeding to death in her arms. He was shot in the chest. The aorta was severed. The Goodbys received $35, I believe, for the loss of their two cats, and the Chalets, who had a rescue dog, were also offered $35. And there's just an injustice in the law that exists today that does not recognize the loss when either negligence or malice occurs with the death of a pet.
Dr. Kenneth Newman, we want to wish you the best in finding sponsors for your bill and getting people to think seriously about the values we place on our beloved pets. And I just want to also mention, you're the author of a book entitled Meet Me at the Rainbow Bridge. It's a wonderful book. Please stay with us. We're here listening to Animals Today.
Up to the sky. That's the sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them. So show dogs will be quiet in transit between shows or in the ring. So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day. Animals Today joins with Coalition to Protect and Rescue Pets in saying shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the vets who perform this inhumane, unnecessary surgery for them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice. Protect theirs. This message is sponsored by Desert Paws. Visit them at desertpaws.org.
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. I want to now welcome Dr. David Dosa, who is a geriatrician and assistant professor of medicine at the Warren Albert Medical School of Brown University. His interests include caring for patients with dementia, caring for the rapidly expanding elderly patient population, and how families discuss end-of-life care options. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dosa.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. David, you've written a great book entitled Making Rounds with Oscar, The Extraordinary Gift of an Ordinary Cat. And you, as I just mentioned, are a geriatrician. Where do you work, and describe the setting for us?
Well, I work in a number of different places, but one of the places where I work is a nursing home called the Steerhouse Nursing and Rehabilitation Center. It's a 120-bed nursing home, which takes care of a number of people with various different medical problems, particularly patients with dementia. We have a end-stage terminal dementia ward where we take care of about 40 patients. And I take care of patients in a variety of different settings, but that's one of the places where I work.
So in your line of work, you are constantly around people in the twilight of their lives, and their deaths are expected and anticipated in general by you and the staff. But then there is this cat named Oscar. Tell us about Oscar and what Oscar does.
Well, Oscar over the years has gotten quite a reputation for holding vigils for a lot of the patients that we care for. He is a regular cat, looks just like any other cat, is a little aloof, is not particularly friendly at baseline, usually spends most of his time by himself. But for whatever reason, Oscar has decided to hold vigils for patients at the end of life. It really is kind of out of character for him, but usually about a day before, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, he kind of curls up oftentimes with the patient in the bed and will sort of stay there holding a vigil for that patient until they move on to bigger and better things.
How many times has Oscar done this?
He's done it a number of times now. We think somewhere north of 60 times over the 5 years since he's really started this behavior.
Are the patients there aware that Oscar is making a visit and what he's been predicting in the past, and do they get freaked out?
Well, you know, this is a terminal dementia unit, and unfortunately most of the patients on this floor have lost the ability to talk. Many of them have lost the ability to walk. So this really is a floor where we take care of patients who are quite terminal in terms of having this horrible disease. And so they may certainly take comfort from the fact that an animal is there. In fact, many of them light up when they
sure.
see the cat. But in terms of, you know, ascribing a meaning to it or like we do, I don't think that they're capable of doing that given the state of their disease. But the family certainly can, and for the most part, I think they take great comfort from it. Again, I think a lot of this is because of the situation where these patients are near the end, and that's a given.
So, David, overall, it's a positive thing for the folks and staff at Steerhouse?
Well, one of the things that I really wanted to do with the book was to go and really try to find out from the families of the patients, you know, what they thought of having Oscar there at the bedside. And almost universally, I was surprised to find that everybody that I spoke with thought that he was a distraction and a source of comfort, and they were very relieved and happy to have Oscar there to share the experience. Not all of them were animal people. There were some, as one woman told me, her mother would have probably poisoned Oscar earlier in her life, but you know, at the end, she seemed to take great comfort from having him around.
So David, I, like you, have a medical background. Let's get to the science of this. How do you think Oscar is able to predict who is able to die in the near future?
Well, I think, you know, there's two questions really there. Certainly there's a biological plausible explanation for what he's doing, whether he's smelling a pheromone or a scent that's released by dying cells. You know, that seems certainly possible when you hear about stories of dogs sniffing out cancer in people and animals being able to predict epileptic seizures before they happen. I think there's a second question there, and that's, you know, what's in it for Oscar? Why does he care, even if he can perceive a smell or a scent? And that's actually a more interesting question. We've tried to ask him. He doesn't tell us, but my sense is that it's behavioral at this point, that he wants to be part of the team, and, you know, he's praised when he's there at the end. So he's made it a habit of being there. You know, often he's the first to know, so that's that really sort of makes it interesting and you know, at times remarkable to see that it's not just that he's responding to people in the room. Sometimes he's the first to pick out a patient that might be near the end.
Sure. Now, you wrote an article that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, one of the most prestigious medical journals there is. What was the reaction to the article?
It was one part cat and one part death and dying is sort of a recipe for media circus. And, you know, there was a little bit of that followed. Oscar's story kind of went worldwide, like everything today. It went viral over the Internet, and everybody had a thought about why Oscar was doing what he was doing. I think lost in that sort of media circus of death cat was, you know, really the background that this animal is providing, I think, a wonderful service for these patients and their families by just being there. And, you know, one of the purposes of the book was sort of to frame that a little bit better and really sort of point out that in many ways we're more proud of the fact that we have a vibrant animal program at Steerhouse than we are of having Oscar there.
Has Oscar been wrong in his predictions ever?
Well, there was one death that I know of where Oscar wasn't at. The person who cares for Oscar had left the ward and was no longer working. He really did kind of go through a period of time where I think he actually went into sort of hiding for a period of time, but he's hit all of them since. He missed one death, and then he's been right back at it.
Has Oscar taught you anything about how you practice or added to your practice at all, or is this just a curiosity?
Well, I think what Oscar does is he shows us that at the end of life, you know, he has nowhere else he needs to be during these time periods. He's there for these patients, and the fact that he diligently returns for the next patient really, I think, has shown us that, you know, we really should be there for our patients. And I think that's what people have learned by his presence there, and, you know, that's what I've learned. I've learned, hopefully, to listen a little bit more to my families and really kind of try to get a sense of what they need. And, you know, I think you can learn a lot by seeing this animal with patients at the end of life. And it really is remarkable when you see it.
I can imagine. David, how big a problem is the growing elderly population?
It's One of the biggest, I think, problems that we have, and you know, when people talk about it, we talk about the silver tsunami, this aging population that really is going to hit us any time now as the baby boomers get older. And, you know, we are unprepared for it. It's a tremendous demographic shift that's going to have major financial implications to the way that we handle health care in this country. And, you know, my hope is that we really start to give it some serious attention, because otherwise we're going to be vastly underprepared.
And a movie's coming out too, right?
Well, there's talk of it. There's a screenplay out in Hollywood that's been making the rounds, pardon the pun, but it's seemingly attached to a reputable producer who is very interested, and we'll see what happens. Sometimes these things can take decades to percolate their way through, but for the most part, it looks like it may happen at some point in the future.
And finding the cat to play the part may be hard.
Dr.
David Dost.
There's been a lot of talk about who's going to play Oscar.
Right, I can imagine. Dr. David Dosa, the book is Making Rounds with Oscar. Thanks for joining us on Animals Today.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate the talk about Oscar.
Don't go away. We have Peter and the News right here on Animals Today.
There's no getting around it. The great outdoors isn't so great for your cat. From speeding cars to toxic lawn chemicals, coyotes to cruel humans, cats are no match for the dangers of today's world. The good news is animal behaviorists say cats don't need to go outside to be happy. Your family will be happier and much healthier, too, without the ticks, fleas, diseases, and the dead critters that outdoor cats bring their owners. And you'll never have to explain to a sobbing child who or what hurt her pet or why he hasn't come home. For starters, don't let your kitten out. He won't miss what he doesn't know. But even adult cats can adapt to life indoors. The key is to provide attention, exercise, and a stimulating environment. Play with your cat. You can hide toys around the house, too. Just make sure there are no detachable parts that can be swallowed. Is he still wanting to get out? Consult an animal behaviorist for more tips. Animals Today urges you, don't give up. Right now, today, you can protect your cat from becoming a tragic statistic. Tomorrow may be too late.
So you and your family have decided to get a dog or cat. We think that's great, and we want to remind you to adopt your next pet instead of buying. That's because there are so many lovable, adoptable dogs and cats waiting to go home that it just doesn't make sense to buy a pet from a breeder or pet store. And tragically, 50 to 70% of all animals that enter shelters are euthanized. That's millions per year. So when you adopt your pet from a shelter, most likely you really are saving a life. Did you know that most dogs sold in pet stores come from puppy mills, crowded, inhumane breeding facilities that exist simply for the profit of their owners? Did you ever consider that dog breeders are in business mainly to create and sell animals? Buying animals just makes pet overpopulation worse because it perpetuates unneeded breeding and takes away chances to live from sheltered animals. Even if you want a particular breed, you should still visit a shelter, because 20 to 25% of animals housed in shelters are purebred. Or contact an animal rescue group that works with the breed you like. With not much effort, you can usually find your perfect companion. So remember, adopt and save a life. It'll give you a nice, warm, and furry feeling. This message is from Desert Paws. Visit us at desertpaws.org.
Welcome back to the show. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Lori.
Hey, what's going on in the news?
Oh, a couple of fish stories to start with.
Fish?
Fish in Washington, in Tacoma.
Okay.
There's a bar, a tavern. And they have this event where they get these little goldfish to race. And so they've got two troughs, and they give the patrons squirt bottles filled with water, and they squirt the fish to make them swim along their trough and their races.
That's silly.
It is silly. So there were complaints from animal rights folks, and so they got rid of that, and instead they're going to do beer pong instead.
Okay, that's better.
Pong. You like that better?
Yeah.
It's not very hygienic.
Okay.
Don't you remember?
No, I don't, actually. I don't. Don't put me on the spot like that. I don't remember that.
Okay. But a serious story in off the coast of Southern California, yeah. You know, in Laguna Beach recently, there are a couple of dolphins that got beached and died shortly thereafter.
Oh, no.
And the preliminary investigations are being done, and they're suspicious that it was due to a poisoning called domoic acid poisoning. I think that's how you pronounce it, D-O-M-O-I-C. And this is a byproduct. It's a biotoxin, and it's a byproduct of algae blooms that grow off the coast. And when these algae really get out of control, then you get a lot of this natural neurotoxin that's released, causes seizures and brain damage and paralysis and foaming of the mouth and disorientation.
In the dolphins.
In dolphins, and it would cause the same in really anyone. And the excess algae, of course, is felt to be a byproduct of waste, human waste, and fertilizers percolating down into the into the shore.
How do we prevent this?
Well, that's right. It's a lot of it is probably due to human waste and activity. It's
wow.
hard to deal with fertilizers getting into the ocean.
Yeah, and there's no way for environmental groups to clean it up or anything.
Well, it just percolates, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
So, well, they're doing necropsies on these mammals.
Okay.
Remember Ruby the elephant?
Yes,
I do. We've talked about Ruby.
Sure.
Ruby worked in a circus for a long time, then lived in the L.A. Zoo for 20 years, and then ultimately was transferred to the Performing Animals Welfare Society. They've got this sanctuary in San Andreas. You've talked
beautiful, beautiful sanctuary.
And you've talked to Pat Derby, who runs that operation. They do a wonderful
right.
thing. They just want the retired elephants to live out the rest of their lives happily.
Yeah, this poor elephant lived the first, 30, 40 years of his life. And
well, yeah, the elephant, she died when she was 50.
Yeah.
So she had a long, hard life.
How many years did she have at the sanctuary?
And she was there for about 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And they are also going to do a necropsy on her. That's Ruby at Paws.
Paws, P-A-W-S.
Right. In Connecticut, legislation being offered to require that animal control officers, if they come across animal abuse or suspected abuse, report that to the Department of Children and Families, the human organization, as a possible thing to look out for.
That's wonderful, because we all know about the link between animal abuse and human violence.
It would, and interesting reading about this, the legislators, so many of them are saying aloud, well, I never knew about this, or this is news to me, or, you know, it's,
wow.
it's like they're hearing about this connection for the first time. So we're still got a lot to teach folks.
We sure do.
Anyway, this is very early in the process. There is a lot of opposition to it, layers of bureaucracy. One Republican representative said, quote, it rings of well-intentioned but needless legislation.
Mm.
So that's the sort of thing you're going to face as this goes along.
Right, right.
I'll let you know if anything new happens in Connecticut.
Please.
Back across the sea, the Dutch are considering banning ritual slaughter without anesthetics.
Okay, that's great news.
Okay, so you know in Muslim and Jewish slaughtering, okay, that's... there are exceptions made for ritual slaughtering without anesthetic, so they're able to kill the live animal with their sharp blade or whatever they do without any anesthetic, fully conscious. It's part of their religion, and that's legal and allowed in the traditional thing.
Which seems so inhumane to me.
Right. Well, the Dutch are, many are trying to ban that.
Okay, that's great.
Okay, and if that happens, well, we'll see what happens, but it's just expected that the slaughter businesses, these specialized slaughterhouses, are just going to move to other countries and open up shop there.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cheaper, easier, faster, right?
Well, that's the way they like it.
Yeah.
And they're still in Missouri. they're still arguing over what the fate of Proposition B is.
Okay,
going to be.
Remind my listeners what
okay,
Prop
so
B.
Okay, so remember, Prop B was a referendum that was voted on by the citizens and passed by a narrow margin, strongly supported by the Humane Society of the United States and other organizations to change the requirements of puppy mills, lessen the number of breeding animals you're allowed to have in a puppy mill, increase the sizes of the cages, get rid of the wire floors, and just to make life better for these animals.
And provide medical care when needed, veterinary care, provide adequate food and water. Good. Very good.
Well, it turns out that just because it passes doesn't mean it automatically becomes law, because the governor has to sign off on this.
Right.
So now he's in a position, and then he was unwilling to just sign off on it. It was just too much of a hot potato for him. And so he's in a position of trying to negotiate some kind of agreement between the parties to get some version of this passed. And it looks like the provision to limit the number of breeding animals to 50 for a given organization is going to go away, regardless of what happens.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. So it's still a hot thing. So he's feeling the pressure. Turns out the Humane Society of the U.S. doesn't want to accept any compromise, but the local Missouri Humane Society is happy with the current thing that's on the table. So we'll see what happens with that.
Very good. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm glad you're listening to Animals Today, where each week we bring discussions and interviews about the important issues concerning animals, both in our backyards and around the world. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.